Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 99 in this series entitled The Body and Soul of Religion in Search of Passion, Chapter 38. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, on the 25th of Nisan, 5760.
Beginning of the 38th chapter of Tanya, the Alter Rebbe explained the awesome energy existing in the verbal articulation of davening, of praying, of reciting the Shema, Birchas Hamazon, the grace after meals, as well as all of the blessings, even when they are devoid of inner spiritual meditation and concentration. Because the ultimate goal and objective of existence and history is not to elevate the heavens, but rather to heal the earth. It's not to discover the divine soul, but rather to uncover the essence of the animal soul and to introduce eternity and absoluteness into the body, into the physical, crude, and brute human body. Hence, the extraordinary value of physical mitzvahs performed by a physical body within physical objects. To the extent, as he put it, that verbal articulation of davening, Shema, Brachas, and so forth, in Halacha takes precedence over the sublime concentration of the soul. Because of this, the verbal articulation as well as the physical mitzvahs allow for the most opaque element of existence, physicality, to express godliness. Now, the Alter Rebbe shifts lanes, or rather, you can say shifts highways, discussing, on the other hand, the need for passion, the crucial importance and value of the spiritual experience of Yiddishkeit, meditation, emotions, fervor, zealousness. The Alter Rebbe will develop this theme in a very elaborate fashion, beginning with chapter 38, developing various forms of heightened states of spiritual consciousness possible in the experience of Yiddishkeit, discussing various levels of meditation, different levels of the emotional attachment that the Jew should strive for to experience with Hashem and with his soul. And this theme will continue for the following 13 chapters, beginning with 38, continuing till Chapter 51. Now let's continue inside. Yes. That is a good question. Talking about the essence of the animal soul, does it come from the same plateau as the divine soul? No. But this was a theme we discussed at length in the earlier chapters of Tanya, and indeed will be alluded to in the continuation of this chapter as well. Let's learn inside. We're in Daf Nun Amud Aleph, page 99. The two dots. Ach af al pi kein amru. 8 lines from the top. Ach af al pi kein, yet nevertheless, notwithstanding all that has been discussed above, chapters 35 through the beginning of 38, concerning the extraordinary virtue of the physical element of the mitzvah, of the element of the mitzvah that affects man's physical self and the physical environment around him. Notwithstanding this, Amru, it has been said that tefillah yishar bracha b'lei kavana in kiguv b'lei neshama, that prayer, davening, or any other blessing said without kavana, devout concentration or intention, is like a body without a soul. And since this statement is the foundation of the entire chapter and the following chapters, so let's discuss for a moment the source of the statement. Although it is often quoted, that davening without kavana is like a body without a neshama. It even rhymes, I just realized. Nevertheless, it's not a statement to be found in Chazal, in Gemara, or in Medrash. It originates in the Svarim of the Acharonim, of the later sages. The first source I have found for this is in the works of a 15th century scholar and great sage, the Abarbanel, Don Yitzchak Abarbanel, the leader of Spanish Jewry during the expulsion of 1492. In his commentary on Pirkei Avos and Perek Gimel, which we will actually be studying this Shabbos, he says this. The following century, it's quoted through the Arizal in Likutei Torah in the beginning of Parshas Ekev. The Arizal writes that every mitzvah contains a body, which is the deed of the mitzvah, as well as a soul, which is the meditation and the emotions that accompany the physical performance of the mitzvah. Zagda Arizal, im nase b'lei kavana atzriche tiyeh kiguv b'lei neshama. If it's performed without the kavana, it's a body devoid of a soul. Interestingly, the Arizal interprets this way the pasuk in Parashas Ekev. Moshe tells the Jewish people, kol ha-mitzvah asher anoichi mitzavcha hayom tishmerun, l'man tichyun u'revisim, which means the complete mitzvah that I command you today, you should perform and observe in order you should believe, you should live and multiply, increase. For Eged Arizal, what's the meaning of kol ha-mitzvah, the entire mitzvah I command you? The mitzvahs I command you, you should perform. So you should perform kol ha-mitzvah, the entire mitzvah, not just the body of the mitzvah, but also the soul of the mitzvah. L'man tichyun, so that you should live. You shouldn't only have the body, you should have the soul. You should be alive with the mitzvah. We continue with one of the students of the Arizal, as well as one of the students of Reb Chaim Vital, Reb Shmuel Di Uzida, the author of Medrash Shmuel on Pirkei Avos. He was one of the great disciples of the Arizal. In fact, once the Medrash Shmuel, Reb Shmuel Uzida, entered into the chamber where the Arizal was sitting with his students, and the Arizal stood up. So when Reb Shmuel left, Reb Chaim Vital, the chief disciple of the Arizal, said, Rebbe, why did you stand up for him? And he said that today the soul of Reb Pinchas ben Yair was impregnated in the body of Reb Shmuel because he performed a certain mitzvah that Reb Pinchas ben Yair, the great Talmudic Tana, used to perform. This is a concept known as ibur, impregnation, different than Gilgal reincarnation, discussed at the conclusion of chapter 14 of Tanya. So the Medrash Shmuel writes also in his commentary on Pirkei Avos and last week's Perek Beis, Mishnah Tesavov, Zag the Mishnah. Kshata Mispalel, Altas, Tilfiloscha Kval, Erachim, and Vitachanunim of Neamakim. When you daven, your davening shouldn't be a burden, a heavy weight on your shoulders. Nebach, unfortunately, you have to daven. It should be a yid should want to daven. A yid should feel the most comfortable place for a yid should be in the davening experience. A yid has to gravitate to davening. So the Beder Shmuel writes, Yoytzei lonu mikan azharas hakavona b'shas ha-tfilah. From this Mishnah we derive the importance of passion, of meditation during davening, ki tfilah b'lei kavona, ki guv b'lei neshama. And he adds that unfortunately most of the world, Reiv ha'olam, are ill in this area. Chaylim chaylizah. They don't know and they don't understand the element of spirituality that Yiddishkeit contains. Finally, the Shalah, Rabbi Shaya Horowitz in the Shnei Luchas Abrusim Masichta Tomid, in the section dealing with Tfilin Yoni Tfilah, says, and I quote, Oid b'divrei chachamim, tfilah b'lei kavana, keguv b'lei neshama. Davening without devout concentration is synonymous or can be compared to a body devoid of a soul. Literally, the explanation in this interesting statement is, a body devoid of a soul may be complete, may consist of all of its limbs and organs, but it's a corpse. And this would serve as a metaphor for a Jew whose Judaism may be complete. On a day-to-day level, he may function and operate on a level where his entire Yiddishkeit is complete. But unfortunately, it's dead. It lacks inspiration, energy, motivation. He behaves like a robot, like a computer, like a machine, lacking a soul. Once, the Holy Seer of Lublin asked the great Hasidic master, who later became known as the Yid HaKadosh, the Holy Yid, why do you chap the words of davening? The Yid HaKadosh was known when he would daven very swiftly. He says, why do you chap the words? So the Yid says, Rebbe, because I love them so much that I can't contain myself. So the seer, the Heilige Chayza, says, my dear student, and what about me? I'm not in love with the words of davening. And I don't chap them. So the Yid HaKadosh responds, he says, the Rebbe's words of davening are pillars of fire. And pillars of fire, it's difficult to chap and to catch. You'll get burnt. But in any case, tefillah b'lei kavana is a goof without a neshama that's cold and that's devoid of that warmth and passion. Does that mean you shouldn't daven? At the beginning of chapter 38, the Alter Rebbe discussed the contrary. That the davening experience itself, the verbal articulation, is powerful and significant. But now he's adding and continuing the opposite theme, which we will soon see the explanation in it. This is how you would literally perceive the meaning of the statement. I once read another story. One of the great Hasidic masters was once visited by his grandfather. It was Rabbi Chiel Meir of Gustinin, I believe. And his grandfather once visited him. It was early in the morning, and the Heiliger Rabbi Chiel Meir has not davened yet. But he realized that his grandfather traveled a long way and did not eat yet, and was tired and hungry, and so forth. He could not eat. He was before davening. So he offered his grandfather to have breakfast without him. But his grandfather refused because he wanted to eat together with the balabas, together with the host. But he said, I didn't daven yet, please. The Gemara says, whatever the host tells you to do, you have to do. Besides, if your host tells you to leave his home, then you don't have to obey. So the grandfather was compelled, he had no choice, but to sit down and eat. And in the meantime, his grandson, Rabbi Chiel Meir, went to another room and davened. After a long time, he came out, and his grandfather says, ah, that was not a davening. You did not have the kavana that a yid should have during davening. He said, Zayda, how do you know? It was true, he knew it was true. How do you know? He says, because the chayvus alavavus, Rabbeinu b'chayi ibn p'kuda, the 11th century great master of Spain who wrote the Duties of the Heart, Chavis Alavavis, his grandfather says, writes there that someone who davens without kavana is compared to someone who feeds his guest without joining him for the meal. You know, when your guest comes to your home, of course, if you're half a mensch, you offer him something to eat and drink. But unless he's intimately close to you, there's some level of shame. So if you sit and I eat with him, he feels much more comfortable. But then there are people, you eat, but they don't join the guest in the meal. So tefillah b'lei kavana, if I daven, I'm not there eating the food. I'm giving someone else beautiful, exquisite dishes and delicious drinks and so forth. But I'm not there. My soul is not there. My heart is not there. I am not part of this meal. So the Zayda says, since you have done this morning, you have given someone else to eat and you have not joined the meal, I knew that your davening is without kavana. That's how we would literally interpret this statement Alter Rebbe is quoting. However, albeit that this is true on a certain level, the Alter Rebbe would not accept this interpretation here in Tanya. Because according to what has been explained in the last chapters and in the beginning of this chapter, this is not true totally, because even if from the perspective of the person this can be the case, that tefillah or other brachas without kavana in his experience is like a guf without a neshama, but since a mitzvah, every mitzvah is an expression of the deepest intimate will of Hashem, so as a result of the mitzvah, the Jew, the performer of the mitzvah, becomes connected, united, and one with Hashem in the deepest way. So just to compare it to a corpse, which contains a very negative connotation, would be wrong according to the Alter Rebbe. A mitzvah, you're doing a mitzvah, if according to halacha you performed Hashem's will, here you connected with Hashem's intimate self, as discussed at length in other chapters. So the Alter Rebbe will discuss the meaning of this statement on much a deeper level by first examining the metaphor, the dynamics of a body and a soul in our own world. Following that examination, we will understand the true meaning in regard to a mitzvah and the intention, the kavana that must accompany a mitzvah. And here the Alter Rebbe develops a very interesting and elaborate explanation. Let's see inside. Pirush, this means this statement that tefillah or other brachas without kavanas kaguv b'lei neshama means ki kemoi shekal habruyim shebo'elam haza sheyesh lehem guf neshama, just as all the creatures of this world possessing a body and a soul. And what is the soul? Sheheim nefesh kol chai, meaning the soul of every living being, v'ruach psarish, the spirit of all human flesh, v'nishmas kol asher ruach chayim ba'apov mikol balachayim, and the consciousness of all that has the breath of life in its nostrils, among all living creatures. Many creatures of our world, Alter Rebbe is saying, possess both a body and a soul. They consist and are comprised of two elements: their body, their physical, concrete counterpart, as well as their inner soul, their consciousness, their spirit, their motor, their battery, their inner spiritual vitality and animation that is usually defined as a nefesh, as a ruach, as a neshama, as a spirit, which is true concerning all animals and all human beings. They comprise a body, and the body consists of a motor, of a spiritual current that animates the body. We're not now talking about the divine transcendental soul. Don't get confused with it. We're talking about the biological consciousness of a man and of an animal. Zogdal Terebbe, v'Hashem chayes kulam, and Hashem animates them all. To quote the pasuk of Nehemiah that we say every morning, both the soul of the creatures as well as the body of the creatures is animated by Hashem. Their entire entity, being and existence, comes from the divine energy that grants them existence. And creates them constantly out of nothingness. by the energy and life which he imbues within them, within the soul and within the body. Shegam aguf achumri, for even the material body. Vafilu avonim va'ofer adayim mamish, and furthermore, even the very stones and earth, which are absolutely inanimate, yesh b'er v'chayis memenu yisbarach, contains within it energy and vitality from Hashem, so that it should not revert to naught and nothingness as it was before it was created. As the Alter Rebbe discussed above in chapter 20, as well as in the second section of Tanya, and we discussed this various times in our classes, that the entire existence, content, design, energy of every single thing in the world comes only and exclusively from the fact that there is a divine energy that is constantly creating it and bringing it into being and granting it its content, its vitality, and its design. Devoid of this energy, the thing would revert to nothingness just as it was before it was created. Thus we see that the divine energy exists in everything in the world, both in the souls of the world and the spirits of the world. Who creates, sustains, and vitalizes and animates the spirit, the nefesh, of the human being, the consciousness of an animal, the spirit of every living organism in the world, the divine energy that is present within it. The same is true concerning the body. Who sustains, vitalizes, animates, invigorates the body of this animal, the body of this human being, as well as the body of everything in this world? Again, the divine energy, Hashem's light. The afopikein, nevertheless, despite the fact that body and soul are alike in that they both contain a divine life force, ein erech v'dimyon klal, bein b'chinnis er v'chayis hamer beguf, Lagabi b'chinis er v'chayis hamer b'neshamashi nefesh kol chay. There is no comparison or similarity whatsoever between the quality of the energy and life force radiating in the body and the spirit and life force radiating in the consciousness, which is the soul, the spirit of every living thing. True, Hashem's energy, the Alter Rebbe says, is present in both of them. Not just present, it is their core source of existence, vitality, and energy. But nonetheless, one cannot compare the intensity of the divine energy invigorating a spirit, which is spiritual, to the divine energy invigorating a speck of dust, or a limb, or an organ, which is physical. And this is his introduction to explain the metaphor of the relationship of a body and a soul, through which we will also understand the content of the metaphor, the relationship of the deed of a mitzvah, the body, to the meditation and passion accompanying the mitzvah, the soul, that although Hashem is present in both of them, nonetheless, one cannot compare the intensity of the energy existing in meditation and passion to the intensity and projection of the energy existing in the deed itself, as the Alter Rebbe will go on to explain. And here, we must examine two pairs of words, of terms, articulated several times in the literature of Kabbalah and Chassidus, which seem identical, but are really very different. And it's these two pair of terms that the Alter Rebbe will discuss here. Term A, Helem and Gilui. Term B, Tzimtzum and Hispashtus. To make it easier, let me define it now briefly. Helem and Gilui, or rather Hester and Gilui, is concealment versus revelation. Hester is opaqueness, concealment. Gilui is revelation. Tzimtzum and Hispashtus is contraction versus expansion. Suppose a person hangs a thick curtain on his window to screen out the sunlight. The light entering the room through the curtain will be of another quality. You may describe it as an echo of the original light. This is called hester, concealment. In that itself, the curtain can be of various levels of density and thickness, which will increase the density and the opaqueness. If, on the other hand, one doesn't hang a curtain on the window, one boards up the window and leaves only a tiny hole by which the light may pass, the light shining through the hole, though greatly restricted and limited, will be the same qualitatively as the original light. There is no hester involved, there is a tzimtzum involved. In the first case, the light was concealed. In the latter case, the light was restricted, was limited. It's the same light, exactly. It's just shining through a tiny hole. The difference between the body and the spirit in this world is not a difference between hester and gilui. It's a difference between tzimtzum and ispashtos, between contraction and expansion. Another metaphor that Chassidus gives to explain the differences: there are two methods of communication, particularly when a teacher, a professor, is attempting to communicate a certain theme or concept to a student, and the theme is extremely profound beyond the ordinary intellectual parameters of the student. One method of communication is he presents to him the idea itself. The light and energy is being communicated, although in a restricted form, in a limited form. He can't communicate it to him with all its details and all of its depth and all of the intensity of the concept. He dilutes it, he limits it, he contracts it, and so forth. Then there is another method of communication which requires not just a tzimtzum but a hester. You communicate the theme through an alien story, episode, metaphor, parable that apparently at first glance does not express or reflect the theme whatsoever. In fact, sometimes the student can hear the story and go away telling the people, "I heard today a gewaldige story," not even realizing that it's just a reflection and a metaphor for a deeper theme and a deeper concept. Now, this metaphor and parable may contain the entire depth. There might be no tzimtzum here, but there's a total hester here. There might be no contraction, but there's a total concealment. So in the former case, in the tzimtzum case, in the tzimtzum scenario, you might be receiving a small portion of the light, but what you are receiving is the real thing. You're getting the light as is, maybe through a tiny hole, but what is coming through is the real energy. In the hester scenario, you might be receiving everything, but really receiving nothing, at least not the real thing. So once the Tzemach Tzedek, before one of the Yomim Tovim, the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, the grandson of the Alter Rebbe, came out into the Beis Medrash in the city of Lubavitch, and in honor of all the guests that arrived to Lubavitch for Yom Tov, he delivered a powerful Hasidic discourse. Immediately following the culmination of the discourse, a whole group of hundreds of guests arrived to Lubavitch, and they heard that they just missed the Rebbe communicating the Maimer, the Hasidic discourse. So the Chassidim were so broken and devastated, they ran into the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, and he said, "Rebbe, can you please repeat the discourse? Lama nigara, it's not fair. Why did we lose the opportunity?" So the Rebbe said, "No." So the Chassidim say, "It's not fear. Why shouldn't we receive the spiritual inspiration and energy that our souls need so much?" So the Tzemach Tzedek said, "Reb Hillel heard the Maimer. Go to Reb Hillel, and Reb Hillel will review the whole Maimer." Reb Hillel was Reb Hillel Paritcher, one of the greatest Chassidim of the Tzemach Tzedek. chief rabbi of the city of Pirates, an extraordinary chassid and servant of Hashem, who was also a brilliant scholar. So he said, Rabbi Hillel heard the Maimer, he'll review it. So one of the chassidim told the Rebbe, Rebbe, aber klei sheni einei mevashel. So the Tzemach Tzedek, without skipping a heartbeat, said, Shru aber hayatzei ledesboi. According to most opinions, klei sheni, which literally means a second vessel, that if not the vessel that was cooked on the fire, is klei rishay, comes directly in contact with the fire. Klei sheni is the second vessel in which you pour in the content from the first vessel. There's an argument in Halacha, but according to many opinions, eini mevashel. It doesn't cook. The second vessel doesn't have a power to cook the food. So the Reb Hillel is going to repeat the Maimer. It's a klei sheni. Klei sheni can't cook our souls with the fire of godliness. The Machzor Tzedek said, true, but ayat se ledes bay. According to all opinions, it can't cook, but the hand gets burnt. So you might be getting a constricted, limited part of it, not with that intensity and not with that heat, but you're getting it. This is generally the difference between Hester and Tzimtzum, or Gilui and Espashtus. Now let's learn inside. So the Alter Rebbe was saying that in this world there are bodies and there are spirits. Both of them are invigorated and exist exclusively due to the divine energy, bringing them into existence. Nonetheless, you cannot compare the energy of the spirits to the energy of the body. You cannot compare a soul to a body. Although, in both of them, the body and the spirit, the divine energy is identical in terms of the concealment of the countenance. Olavushim shavim. Both consisting of identical garments. Sha'ayn mistatiru misalamu mislabishbem. In which the energy hides, conceals, and clothes itself. Which means that the garments, the veils that conceal the divine energy are identical concerning the body as well as the spirit of the human being or the animal. And he explains, Kishneyim eimeyelam haza, for both body and spirit are of this world. Shabiklaluse mistater b'shava. Ha'er v'achayus shemiruach piviz baruch. Where throughout the world and all its creatures, the energy and life force issuing from the breath of Hashem's mouth are equally concealed, which means in everything existing in this world, there is a powerful opaqueness and concealment. Although everything in this world, all of the bodies and all of the spirits, the consciousness is invigorating the bodies. Every speck of dust, every stone, mineral, branch, or thorn receives its entire being, existence, and vitality from the divine energy, but nonetheless this energy is veiled and clothed in many garments that conceals itself simultaneously of it granting it vitality and animation. How does this concealment happen? Bibchinis Hester Panim, by concealment of the countenance. V'yiridus ha-madregis b'yishtalshalus ha-ilamus. And by the descent of the life force from level to level through the evolution of the worlds, mimadrega lemadrega, from one level to a lower level, b'tzimtzumim rabim v'atzumim, by means of numerous and powerful tzimtzumim and contractions, which means, what happens to the divine energy? The divine energy does not connect with the thing that it creates in a direct way. The divine energy, first of all, conceals its face. Then it veils itself in many garments. Not only that, it goes through a very meticulous and nuanced process of evolution through many worlds, many levels. In each world and in each level, the energy becomes less sublime, less spiritual, more coarse, and more tangible. Not only that, it goes through many tzimtzumim, and not just that, it goes through atzumim, powerful tzimtzum. All this allows the energy to become more dense and more dense, because naturally it's undefined, indivisible, infinite, awesomely overwhelming, and one, and exclusive. It's infinite. So it must develop in many stages and become more tangible, more concrete, further removed from its source. With each progressive step downward, it becomes more obscured and more concealed and more finite. Ach nishlabish beklipas noiga, till it manifests itself in what we call klipas noiga, a shell, a husk, lahachayes klalos elam hazachumri, in order to give life to the totality of this material world, to allow for a material, fragmented, egotistical, agnostic world. All of these contractions, limitations, and obscurities are not enough. It must manifest itself within a total shell and husk. And now, via this husk that totally conceals its presence, it now creates, sustains, relates to, invigorates, animates, and grants vitality to everything existing in this world. The Hainu, this means, Kol dvarim amutarim v'atayrim shepeilum hazah, all things of this world that are permitted and pure. The neutral elements of the universe, from the galaxies, to the animals, to the minerals, to human beings, whatever it may be, which all receive their divine vitality via something known in Kabbalah as klipas noiga, a shell, a husk that is somewhat translucent. And furthermore, umimen of al yada, mushpayim dvarim hatmeim, and from her and through her, klipas noiga, evolve also all impure things, because she, klipas noiga, is the intermediary level, as mentioned above in chapter 7 and chapter 37. In klipas itself, remember there are two levels. There are the translucent husks and there are the opaque husks. So the divine energy first manifests itself in a shell to invigorate and create and sustain everything permitted in this world. And via klipas noiga, the energy is now transmitted to the next level, into opaque husks, from where all forbidden entities of this world and negative and evil energies of this world receive their energy. So what is the Alter Rebbe saying? From a Hester and Gilui point of view, if we're discussing opaqueness versus revelation, my consciousness and my leg are identical. My psyche and my abdomen are exactly the same. Just as my toenail denies the fact that really it's spiritual and godly, my psyche and spirit denies the same truth. Just as medicine, biology, which deals with the body, the physical body, does not express godliness, psychology, which is the science of the spirit, of the psyche, of the soul, doesn't express godliness. Sometimes it's even the other extreme. Psychology can obscure godliness even more than biology. The reason we'll see soon. Ah, you'll ask a question. The whole definition of my leg, my arm, my abdomen, my tooth and my palate, as well as my spirit, my psyche, my imagination, my wisdom, and everything, its whole definition is the divine content, the transcendental energy that's imbuing it with being, with design, with existence. It has no identity or reality independent of it, as discussed many times in the past. Similar to when I daydream about 1,000 people whom I'm lecturing to, perhaps. that all these 1,000 people whom I depict vividly in my daydream, and their feelings and the shape of their nose and the color of their eyes and so forth, have no reality independent of my imagination and my creative thoughts. And the same is true concerning the world which is just tangible. That the only definition of reality is the godly energy that animates everything. So how is it that there is such denial and there is such denial of this truth? And the answer is Hester. There is total opaqueness and concealment. There is a dense veil and curtain that allows me to define myself as coarse, as physical, as fragmented, as detached, as well as everything else in the world. So that same divine energy that's invigorating at that moment conceals its existence to allow our egos to emerge. The world, in other words, lies. In Chassidus is an expression in Yiddish, the Welt liegt. The world lies. The very way how the world presents itself is a lie. This is true about everything in the world, not just the bodies of the world, not just the mountains and the rocks and the minerals and the diamonds, also the nefashis of the world, the tangible and the intangible, my arm and my mind. Just as when I gaze at a mountain, I don't see that it's godly. When I gaze at a donkey, I don't see it's godly. Even when I gaze at a person and on his soul and on his psyche, despite its complexity and despite its awesomeness and so on and so forth, one can entertain the thought that the human soul is not godly, that the human soul has another definition outside of the definition that it's spiritual, that it's beautiful, that it's transcendental, that it's not outside of the realm of godliness. On the contrary, we can very well entertain the thought that my spirit and your spirit is animalistic. And what is an animal? Is a behemoth. And what is an animal? Coarseness, separation, fragmentation, and so forth. The reason for this, Zog the Alter Rebbe, because there was a powerful process of Hester, of opaqueness. The divine energy doesn't communicate with us directly in this world. Not only does it go through its own stages of contractions and limitations, but furthermore, it condenses itself in various husks, klipas naiga, through which it vitalizes our body as well as our consciousness. So our consciousness, our biological soul known as the Nefesh HaBahamis, what was the whole Nefesh HaBahamis in Tanya all about? An animal soul. What makes it an animal soul? The biological soul has any energy outside of godliness. That's its only definition. That's the definition of anything in the world. But the energy, the divine energy invigorating my biological consciousness is communicated to it through klipas naiga. That's why we say the animal soul comes from klipas naiga. What does it mean, klipas naiga? That the divinity of it is obscured. So my animal soul can define itself in terms of self-centeredness and selfishness. And the whole work of the Beinoni and Tanya is what? To bust the shell. To pierce through the concealing layers, as mentioned, to uncover the animal soul. In Likutei Torah, this week, Parshas Emor, in the Alter Rebbe's discourse on the Pasuk Usfartim Lachem, the Alter Rebbe explains the request we ask from Hashem every day before Krishna. V'loy nevosh, v'loy nikolim, v'loy nikosh elaylam vad. We should not be brought to a condition of shame, of embarrassment, humiliation, and we should not stumble for eternity. In the mashal, there's no comparison between the Ur and the Medaber and the Ur and the Daimim. And there's no comparison between the Ur in the Maisa and the Ur in the Kavana. Mitzvahs, the Alter Rebbe explained, represent the intimate revelation of Hashem's deepest core self. In a mitzvah, he's totally exposed, without any concealments or veils, as he is on his deepest level. You know, you can have a relationship with someone. You can have a relationship with someone. We have many relationships with many different types of people, but everyone knows that there are various masks in the interactions. Most people actually live that way and operate that way. And then there is a relationship devoid, very unique, it's hard to find in this world, devoid of any masks, of any concealments, of any obscurities, of total emotional nakedness and exposure and so forth. True unconditional love. It's very profound and it's very precious. But anyone who has experienced a taste of that in his or her life knows that it's the deepest gift you can get in life. The ability to be totally exposed with someone and to relate to someone else on that level. Hashem has a relationship with the universe. But tragically, till Mashiach comes, it's a masqueraded relationship. So his desire and his energy that's invested and interacts with the cosmos and everything contained in the cosmos, he is concealed. That energy is concealed, not just because you don't see it in the world. No, deeper, the Alter Rebbe said. The very fact that it lends credence to an existence perceived as something outside of him means that he is concealed. Because when he is not concealed, there is nothing outside of him. In his intimate presence, there is kula kamei kalei chashev, there is only him. When he conceals himself, there can be a world. You want Hashem? You want Hashem in his, may I say, nakedness, in his total exposure without any veils, and he got a mitzvah. Here Hashem shares with you what he is or what he is really all about. So a mitzvah, in a deed of a mitzvah, and in the kavan of a mitzvah, there's no hester whatsoever. So in the hester and gilui piece, they're identical. There's no hester. There's no concealment whatsoever. The difference between kavanah and maisa is in the tzimtzum and ispashtos. Just as in the metaphor. Guf and nefesh are equally impacted by the hester. The difference is in tzimtzum and ispashtos. In the nimshel as well. Meditation, passion, and the brute mitzvah are identical in the fact that this is Hashem's intimate self. The difference is in the ispashtos. Here the illumination of the light is communicated through a tiny hole. Here, through a window. And here, here it's communicated without any mediums. And Alter Rebbe emphasizes, V'loi shedveikus amachshav v'seichel adam b'yiz barach. He mitzad atzma l'mayla medveikus kima mitzvus maishiz b'peil mamash. This doesn't mean, as one might understand upon reading this, that the attachment of man's thought and intellect to Hashem is intrinsically superior to attachment through actual practical fulfillment of the mitzvahs, dependent on action, as will be explained later. You might say, of course kavanah is superior. Why? It's spiritual, it's passionate, it's romantic, it's exciting. Spirituality is closer to godliness than physicality. You might say that. So here the energy is much less intense. The Alter Rebbe says, no, it's not because my spiritual experience essentially is deeper than my physical experience. Ela mipnei shezo gam kein nitzeinu yizbarach. L'dafka b'seichel l'machshava. Rather, kavanah is superior because this too is Hashem's will. Not because it's intrinsically superior due to its spiritual nature, but because this is also Hashem's will. L'dafka b'seichel machshava, that man should attach himself to him by intellect and thought. V'kavanas ha-mitzvahs ma'isiyas, and by the kavanah of the act of mitzvahs. U'b'kavanas krishma, and by one's meditation during Shema, during recital of Shema, u'tfil, and during davening u'shar brachas and other blessings. V'aras ratzon elyon hazeh ha'meir u'melubeshes b'kavanah zu. and the illumination of this supernal will that radiates and is manifested in the Kavana. Is infinitely greater and loftier than the illumination of the supernal will that radiates and is clothed in the performance of the mitzvahs themselves in action and speech without kavanah. Similar to the superiority of the light of the soul over the body, which is a vessel and garment for the soul, just as the body of the actual mitzvah is a vessel and garment for its kavanah. One can't forget what the Alter Rebbe established earlier in Tanya, that any eye, even the greatest spiritual eye, even the deepest ecstatic experience of transcendence, doesn't have the ability to grasp Hashem, being that He is infinite, and thus the deepest experience of man can't touch the divine. Because my deepest eye, as far as I reached and as high as I saw, can't even scratch the surface of infinity. But not only that. That he said in chapter 4. Chapter 35, he added a deeper point. The very fact that I am experiencing something means that I don't have Hashem. Because the definition of Hashem is that there is Him and there's nothing else outside of Him. If I am experiencing something, it means that He's not present. Wherever there's no ego, there's no I, that's where Hashem is present. Wherever there is an I, it means He's concealed. Because if He wouldn't be concealed, I can't emerge. So the very fact that I am having a spiritual experience means that He's not around. He's not present. When godliness is concealed, there's no I. The whole definition of an eye comes because he obscures that element. So if Kavana wouldn't be his will, it would be a spiritual experience. A spiritual experience as lofty and beautiful and romantic, as splendorous and as majestic as it may be, would not even reach and scratch the surface of the awesomeness of the deed of a mitzvah, because that's his will. Kavana is I, and a mitzvah is Hashem. So you're dealing with two realms. You're dealing with I versus He. You're dealing with the real thing or the fake thing. So it's not that Kavana is deeper because it's spiritual. No, because the Alter Rebbe says Kavana is also a Zeratz, and so it's also a Him. Hashem wants that I should take a willow and a citron and shake it. He also wants that my mind and my heart should be attached to Him. Both consist His intimate will. He wants that piece of parchment should be in a black box that should be wrapped around my arm. He wants that physical candle should be kindled. He also wants that my mind, my psyche, my passion, my inspiration, my inner personality should be connected to Him. That's also his Ratzon. So he's there in his essence. Zagdal Terebbe and Hester, there's no difference. It's both his intimate presence. But the will, as it's expressed in the body, is not the will how it's expressed in the soul. The will, the energy, the divinity as it's expressed in the parchment and in the physical mitzvah is not the will that's expressed in the kavana of a mitzvah. Conclude with a little metaphor. In mathematics, one can speak of an absolute number. Absolute numbers. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. Besides this, one can determine the specific size and power of an absolute number by adding zeros. So the 2 can be 2, 20, 200, 2,000, 200,000, and 200 billion, and so forth. But it remains a 2. The latter is connected to Tzimtzum and Hespashtus. It can be a 2 and it can be 20 billion. The same quality in an expansive form and fashion. So this is what Alter Rebbe is saying. The difference between a mitzvah and not a mitzvah is a difference between 0 and 1. It's an absolute difference. It's a difference between Hester and Gili. You got it or you don't got it. You're living or you're not really living. You have the it or you don't have the it. There's an absolute difference. Then you have already in the realm of the mitzvah itself. So there's the 2, and there's the 200, and there's the 20 million. And here is the difference between the mice of the mitzvah and the kavanah of the mitzvah. As the Alter Rebbe will continue to discuss and elaborate on in the continuation of the chapter. Have a wonderful week.